With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a destination. We are finally here.
Let's go.
What is good? Welcome back to another episode of Destination Dynasty. I am your gracious host, Scott Connor. You can find me on X at CharlesChillFFB. Of course, everything over at Destination Devi at DestinationDevi.com. Sign up for the Discord. You can find it through the website or through Patreon.com/AllGas. Access to the Trades in 5 or Heisman tier in there. Get you bonus content weekly from the Discord, AMAs, bonus shows. A lot of times we just sit down and we'll record conversations, which you'll get those on the pod feed as well. And I have to give a shout out to our Destination Devi crew who went over 6 hours yesterday live on the YouTube feed talking all things combine, reactions, mock drafts. It was full of fun. There was a lot of great discussions, both dynasty, prospects, combine, strategy, everything you can think of. So you can check that out. And then also Destination Chill last night with Ray, where we kind of walked through our observations and reactions from the combine, and more to come on that Destination Chill. As we announced on Wednesday, we'll be going live twice per week now. So Sunday nights and Wednesday nights for the off season. So check that out if you're not subscribed, but it gives listeners multiple chances during the week to just listen to Ray and I talking whatever, dynasty, football, psychology, strategy, bunch of different topics that we'll go over there and interact with the people that are such loyal followers that have checked out the show thus far. Thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you more throughout the summer on the feed. So with that, today's show is going to be a little bit different. There was a lot of information to absorb this weekend with the combine, with pre-NFL free agency discussions. A lot of my content listening over the past week or so has been just that. What are NFL people hearing from the combine? What is getting reported at the combine, coming out of the combine? We are less than 2 weeks away now from NFL free agency. It'll actually be kicking off with the legal tampering period here in a week, which is crazy that we're already here. But this is going to be a big week for things to start heating up. So I wanted to get started with this episode. And it is going to be 6 bets that I'm making in my dynasty leagues prior to NFL free agency. And the reason I'm doing it this way is a lot of times we get caught up in the I need to wait to see what happens game, and then I will react. Then I will put my chips down. How many people have sent out a trade offer and the response has been, let me see how the draft plays out. Let me see how free agency plays out. And I really don't want to buy this player because they can sign somebody in free agency. And to be a good dynasty player, I think you already have to be analyzing those things 6 months ahead, 3 months ahead. You need to be forecasting, okay, what could happen? And it's not just what could happen for the player. What could happen from a psychological standpoint to the player's stock? Meaning, what will other people think if a team brings in another running back? What will other people think if a team drafts a receiver? That's the things that you have to consider when talking about players, more so than let me see what happens so then I can make my own decision. Because at that point, the odds adjust. Think of it as getting in early on a bet. A week before a game, you get your bet down. Now, you may be way off. You may get a team as a 7-point favorite, and you go, there's no way that they're not going to be more than a 7-point favorite. And then things happen during the week, and they close, and they're a 4-point favorite. All right. You know, you probably got a pretty bad line, right? Probably would have rather had it at a 4-point favorite than a 7-point favorite. You know, if you're betting them to cover, it's easier to cover 4 than it is to cover 7. But it can go the other way. It can be one where it moves significantly in the opposite direction and you got the best odds. I mean, that's how you kind of have to play these situations. And it's not exactly the same because, you know, we do have some idea of things that could happen. We also can make assumptions that there's probably going to be players that sign to teams. If your analysis on a running back is hopefully they don't bring in competition, newsflash, they're probably going to bring in competition. The key is how does the community react to that competition? How do other people view the player or players that they bring in? So that's what we're going to talk about on this show. I'm going to go through 6 prominent rumors slash things that have been buzzing during the combine or will be buzzing right before free agency starts and actionable ways that you can place your chips down today. And keep in mind, I'm trying to get ahead of the game before the odds adjust to where it's a 50-50 bet. I don't want to be making bets with somebody else when both of us have all of the information. I would rather be making a bet now where I'm kind of guessing the direction, the information, or the outcome is going to go, and I'm willing to put my money down or willing to make the move, assuming that before it actually happens. Because once it happens, especially if you're dealing in a league with other players that are playing similarly or other players that are kind of thinking through some strategy or process like this, and they're not just reacting to players, they're already considering this as well. So you're getting pretty square odds if you wait until everything is in front of you, then you make your decision. We all can feel this. Think of a rookie draft in the past. You think, oh man, the best time to move those rookie picks is on the clock. Certain picks, sure. There's going to be certain picks where people just want the pick. They already kind of know who's going to be there at the pick, but they just want the pick. But that's not the majority of picks. That's the minority. The majority of picks are, I'm not sure, but I think this could be the tier. I'm not sure, but I think this could happen. And then how many times when it actually is on the clock, that's not the case. And it falls flat. That pick's just not that desirable. I'll take it, but I'm not willing to go pay for it. And that's a microcosm of the dynasty game we live in now, where there's so much information out there. You can basically search around and find an inside track or an angle you want to play on almost anything. Almost any player that there could be some sort of movement on, you can find an angle to play. Now, do you want to play it? How do you play it? What does that look like? That's what we'll talk about in this episode. So we're going to start by talking about Mike Evans. So this is from Aaron Wilson on March 2nd. Multiple NFL sources anticipate an outstanding market for Buccaneers wide receiver Mike Evans. He mentions the Texans, who have good young wide receivers, Nico Collins and Tank Dell, are not expected to pursue Evans in free agency. A couple other things have come out with Mike Evans that it sounds like he is going to hit free agency. There was a deadline that they had set with the Buccaneers, so he's not just going to re-up with Tampa Bay. Talks are that he could discuss with Tampa Bay coming back to them, but it's going to be just like everybody else. They're all going to be able to talk with him during free agency. So Mike Evans is going to hit free agency, and it's interesting because Mike Evans last year was seen as a veteran receiver but was a tier below everybody else. He was a tier below Stephon Diggs. He was a tier below Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, clearly well below Tyreek Hill, right on par with somebody like DeAndre Hopkins until he goes out and has a great season. One of his better seasons. He's had a ton of great seasons in a row, but he had a very, very good year. And now it's flipped. Now Mike Evans, despite being no different than he was a year ago, is on the precipice of hitting free agency, coming off a really strong year. And I think he's already now jumped into that range where I think most people would prefer him to Kupp. He might not be at the Adams level yet, But I think the person that's buying him is kind of looking at him to do the same thing, thinking he's a cheaper version of it. Same with Stephon Diggs. Heck, there might be people that actually like Mike Evans short term over Stephon Diggs, given that they're both in a similar spot in their careers. But so here's the bet on Mike Evans. People assume, well, when he's leaving Tampa, that he's going to go to one of these better situations. Yeah, man, he's going to go to Kansas City. Man, he's going to go to one of these places where he's just going to be wheels up. And it's interesting because there's not a lot of those situations out there. How many situations is he going to go to that is willing to pay him? Because the other thing is he's probably going to get paid on a short-term deal, but it's going to be a heavy-hitting deal to where it's not going to be cheap. So how many situations is he going to go to where the community is going to go, all right, I'm back in on Mike Evans, or I'm more in on Mike Evans than what he has been the last couple of years, or what he is right now? And I get it. A receiver that is where he is coming off a good year still probably doesn't have the market value of a player that is worth as much to your team as they would be on the open market. So if you have Mike Evans, you're probably analyzing it like, hopefully he goes to a good spot so I can actually sell him. And that's the demand speaking, right? That is the, I hope he goes somewhere so there now is increased demand on Evans. But what he actually is probably isn't much different than what he is right now. You're trying to use the landing spot as a window to be able to sell him because you're trying to sell him right now and the offers you're getting probably aren't that good. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I would be willing to still take what I can get for Mike Evans right now. Probably would want 2 seconds. I would love to get a second in this year's class, preferably one in the top 20 or so. But if I could get 2 seconds, I really don't care about when I'm getting that other second rounder. I don't care if this is the 208 and a 26 second. And we're talking general here. So obviously you have to do your league calculation. What's the roster construction? You know, is it best ball? Is it lineup? Is it shallow? Is it deep? You know, there's going to be a different formula for everybody listening to this. If it's a 10-team start 9, 1 QB, that's totally different than a 12-team start 12 best ball league. You're going to value him totally different in those two leagues. But what I'm saying is I'm actually willing to just walk away from a player like that now if I can get that price. And I'm willing to be more flexible. The key there is the two shots. The key there is getting a potential receiver in this class. Talk about that here in a little bit. Getting a receiver in this class, or just a pick in this class in general, somewhere in the top 20 or so, which may be a little tougher after the combine. But I think if you're willing to go down to that mid-second range and then see if you can get a 26-second tacked on, I think that's the way to play it. But I'm willing to bet on the non-great Mike Evans landing spot. Because I don't think where he was is bad, but I also think where he could end up is not necessarily going to vault the dynasty demand of Mike Evans way up. So I'm willing to bet against that just because there's not that many landing spots out there where you can see the community just absolutely going nuts. You know, everyone says Kansas City. Like, not every receiver is going to go to Kansas City. There's already been 4 or 5 that have been linked to KC. They're not going to sign all of them. Team like Buffalo, not going to sign Mike Evans. Look at their cap situation. They're not going to blow what it's going to cost for Mike Evans to go to Buffalo. So like, where else is there where the community is just going to go, that is a smash spot? Heck, the smash spot's probably Tampa Bay. But that's not really going to generate a lot of buzz. And I think there's a decent chance he goes back to Tampa Bay. But is that going to generate any more trade buzz than there has been on him over the last couple months? No, it's not. So I'm willing to just cash out on Evans before free agency. I think there's a chance that after free agency, there's other names that pop up. Rookies continue to get steamed up, and he's actually somebody that will have less demand after free agency because the anticipation of him going somewhere like Kansas City, and then he doesn't, he just goes back to Tampa Bay. All you're really doing is going, okay, can he run it back one more year? So I'm willing to bet against him. If I can get 2 seconds for Mike Evans, generally do the calculation in your league, I'm willing to sell now. Because I think other people may be buying, saying, you know what, I want to buy him in case he gets one of those spots. Then maybe I can sell him for even more than what I bought him for. So I think it's worth engaging in conversations to sell Mike Evans this week. Next up, this is from Jared Smalley. He retweeted a blurb from ESPN Insider. So it's Dan Graziano and Jeremy Fowler. Their latest buzz on Justin Fields and his market. And this was also talked about by Diana Russini on the Athletic podcast this week. Talked about Justin Fields and his market. And it's not really there. It's not as robust as people like to talk about that it actually is out there. And this was Jared Smalla talking about. He's been told, well, the ESPN Insider article, and he's just quoting it. I've been told by multiple sources that signing Kirk Cousins, not trading for Justin Fields, is the Falcons' top QB situation. Then he mentions it would be a great liftoff for Drake London and Kyle Pitts. But let's focus on the Falcons, because I think there's this narrative, and it kind of jumped up this past week when the odds for Justin Fields' next team significantly shifted in favor of it being the Atlanta Falcons. And I don't know about that. Everything I've heard, I listened to the Jordan Schultz podcast where he was on last week. I think with Steve Wyche. It was on the NFL QB podcast or something like that. I can't remember the exact title of it. But he was on and he talked about Justin Fields is not going to Atlanta. It's not a fit for what they want to do. He mentioned Zach Robinson. Justin Fields is not the kind of QB that Zach Robinson wants. And guess who might be? Kirk Cousins. So I think this is interesting that the odds shifted in favor of Fields. You've heard this narrative about how people of Atlanta would love Fields there as the QB. Atlanta is one of the teams that doesn't sell any tickets, half-empty stadium. Like, they need a boost. And I think part of what's been pushing this is that a guy like Kirk Cousins wouldn't do that. Not going to be a lot of excitement with Kirk Cousins. But fit-wise, it's probably much better with Kirk Cousins or even Baker Mayfield with Raheem Morris coming over. Like, I think there's a chance that both of them could be much better fits than Justin Fields. Yet, people are just waiting for Justin Fields to go to the Falcons. And here's the funny thing. If Justin Fields goes to the Falcons, is that really that great? I'm not even going to analyze that because that's not in my lane. But you know what it is great for? If I have Justin Fields and he goes to the Falcons, other people think it's great. So I'm super excited. If I have Justin Fields, I probably don't want to sell Justin Fields before he lands somewhere. However, this rumor makes me kind of think if he doesn't go to the Falcons, let me just lay this situation out. If he doesn't go to the Falcons, what happens if Justin Fields is still sitting on the Bears and we are 5 days into free agency? We've seen Cousins sign. Russell Wilson has gotten cut. Russell Wilson has signed. We've seen some other guys like Baker Mayfield re-up with the Buccaneers. We might maybe even seen some other quarterbacks that are backups sign somewhere where you're like, damn, that might have been a good spot for one of these QBs to go. Ryan Tannehill signs with the Steelers. Now, he may not start. But if the Steelers bring in Ryan Tannehill, they're certainly not trading for Justin Fields. A team with an ambiguous quarterback situation goes and signs a Gardner Minshew, somebody like that. So I think there's some risk that Justin Fields is everybody's plan B or plan C. And he's still on the radar. But what you don't want for Dynasty is a week or two into free agency, Justin Fields is still on the Bears. And the reports are, well, they've had a couple offers, but they haven't been what the Bears have wanted. And now you've had maybe a dozen teams that even could consider a quarterback. Of course, 4, 5, 6 teams are going to draft a QB with either first or second round draft capital. And those are going to be the guys they're going to plan to start. Forget about the 4 quarterbacks in the first round. They're going to go to 4 teams that are going to be starting them. That same team is not also giving up second round draft capital for Justin Fields. Then there's a couple teams in the second that could draft Michael Penix, that could draft Bo Nix, they could draft Spencer Rattler. Now, they may not be the long-term starters, but you're not drafting one of those guys and then also giving up draft capital for Justin Fields. So there's going to be probably 6 teams that use a draft pick to fill their quarterback void, and probably not going to be one of those teams that is going, let's trade for Justin Fields. Because if you trade for Fields, you're trading for him. You have a 5th-year option. You're essentially probably making a 2-year commitment to Fields. And here's my fear is that those landing spots start to dry up. And you do not, for Dynasty, you do not want Justin Fields on your Dynasty roster if he's still on the Bears on draft day. That means everybody has passed him up. That means everybody has had a shot to trade for him and they've said, nah, I'm good. So even if he goes somewhere, he's going to go somewhere. He's going to get traded. But if he's traded on day two of the NFL draft and a team gives up a third and a fifth round pick, he's plan C. It's, well, we couldn't position ourselves in free agency to get who we wanted. We couldn't trade up in the draft. We didn't really like the value on some of these QBs. We went in another direction with our second round pick. Here you go. We'll trade for Justin Fields. He was our fallback option. You don't want that. Because, A, you're going to have to hold a dead asset for 6 weeks. You're going to have to wait all the way till the draft. And if his trade doesn't come until draft day, a team settled on him. A team that went, oh, shit, we're stuck at QB. Let's go trade for Fields. That's what happened. You don't want that. You want him dealt even this week before free agency officially starts. You want that report. When the league year begins, Justin Fields will be traded to the Falcons. Compensation being worked out, second and a sixth rounder, something like that. That's the announcement you want for Dynasty. You do not want, well, it's day four of NFL free agency. The Justin Fields trade watch is still out there. Meanwhile, these teams are out there signing other QBs. These teams are out there jockeying for position in the draft, and Fields is still on the Bears. So I'm willing to kind of make the bet now that if you don't think Fields is going to the Falcons, I don't see it. I don't see the landing spot that everybody is going to be super excited for. Maybe it happens, but if you have some Fields and you can get out on him for a top 10 QB price, I think there's a lot more risk baked into this situation than people are giving it credit for. The eyes of dynasty managers are dead set on it being the Falcons. And based on this report and based on what I've heard with Zach Robinson about him maybe not being a fit for Justin Fields, I'm just betting against the Atlanta landing spot, point blank, period. So next up, we are going to talk tight end, and this time it is Dalton Schultz. So I'm going to go back to a tweet from February 20th, where the mention was with the Texans franchise tag, Jonathan Grenard. It was Jeremy Branham, who is a University of Houston radio host, talking about Grenard and the franchise tag. But then he brings up, for the first time that I've heard, the franchise tag for Dalton Schultz, it would be $12 million. He's a very reliable tight end target that C.J. Stroud really likes. The Texans would be wise to keep him around to alleviate the need for another pass catcher in the draft, at least probably a high pick. And then that was doubled down by Aaron Wilson, who is one of the more plugged-in Texans writers. He is an NFL reporter, but he's very close with the Texans. He mentions how him has heard that Dalton Schultz is still working on a contract potentially with the Texans. He doesn't mention anything about it being a franchise tag, but he says that Schultz will be back with the Texans, a league source predicted to him. The Texans have not used the franchise tag under Nick Caserio, but I think it's interesting because what happened when Dalton Schultz left Dallas? People assumed he's a product of Dallas. He leaves. He can never get a good landing spot, or he won't get one better than where he was at. So he's downturn in value. More importantly, though, it's not the downturn in value. I don't know how many times I'm going to have to say this. It's not the downturn in value. It's the downturn in nobody really wants him. We know he's a top 12 tight end. He's probably a top 12 tight end if he remains with Dallas, or if he did, or if he remains with the Texans. But there's risk that he's not. And I think the assumption out there in the dynasty streets is that he's not going to be on the Texans. So sure, could he go to Cincinnati? Could he go to one of these other teams where you're like, okay, that's good. But if he's just bag chasing and ends up somewhere besides the Texans, I'm not sure the excitement is going to be there. However, reading between the lines here, the $12 million franchise tag, very doable. The Texans have the cap space to do it. Aaron Wilson's report about how the Texans really want to keep him, whether that's a tag or whether that's a long-term extension, I think he's probably the best value tight end right now. He's still a top 15 tight end according to Keep Trade Cut. But here's the thing. I don't think the league views it that way. I think a lot of people in Dynasty are going, man, I need to get off this Dalton Schultz. Or they haven't really looked into it because they just figured nobody wants Dalton Schultz. So I think your chance to go get him, if you're willing to move other tight ends with bigger names, but I would much prefer Schultz to. I mean, why would you take Dallas Goedert over Dalton Schultz? Why Pat Freiermuth over Dalton Schultz? There's plenty of names you could go find the deal. Heck, you might even be able to get a plus on Schultz for somebody like Goddard. But I think that's a bet that I'm willing to make. If I'm in one of these leagues, especially two PPR, for instance, and I can get Schultz for, you know, something that I don't value as much in terms of a threshold, like a mid second round pick or something like that, I'm actually fine doing it in one of those formats to where I think the narrative is going to change if he stays with the Texans. It's almost going to be like, whew, okay, good. I have some Dalton Schultz. He's back with the Texans. I feel good about him again. And I want to buy before everybody feels good about him again because I like him. But I think he's a limited ceiling tight end. But he's also one that as soon as you get good news that he's staying with the Texans, he's just going to go back to a player you'd probably rather have than you'd rather buy. So in that case, that's a player I'm going to be trying to pivot to. I don't have a lot of Schultz exposure in Dynasty if I'm looking at where I'm sitting at on him. It's not super high. I think I only have about 5%. So that'll be a guy that I'm interested in buying, actually 9%. I'm interested in getting a couple more, especially if I'm overweight on some guys that are a little bit higher. I have more Dallas Goedert. I have more George Kittle. I even have more Michael Mayer, Evan Ingram. Like those would be guys I'd be willing to pivot off to for Schultz. And I think the name bias of some of those names versus what Schultz is before he re-ups with the Texans. I mean, he signs a 3-year deal with the Texans. It's over. He's cemented as one of those top 12 tight ends that nobody really loves, but everybody that has him really likes him. So I try to get in on the Schultz business before we get to free agency. So next up, we're going to talk about another receiver. And I saw this tweet a little while back, didn't really look into it any further, but it mentions the Seattle Seahawks outlook for 2024, talking about new offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb, and then Tyler Lockett being a potential cut candidate. I've heard this narrative go around in a lot of fantasy and dynasty content talking about Tyler Lockett. He's going to get cut. And that means I really want to get me some JSN. And this is going to be a super, super pass heavy offense. I mean, look what Ryan Grubb did with what he was doing in Washington. Look what he did his entire time in Washington. Look what he's going to do with the Seahawks. You know, just can't wait what that offense is going to look like. But then you look back and you look at where Ryan Grubb came from, and you look at what the history has been for him, where he started and where he's been his entire career. Sure, he was at Washington, and they had a very good offense for the last couple years. But then you look at their hire at head coach. You know, you have Mike McDonald. You look at where Mike McDonald came from. You know, Michigan, the Ravens. I mean, look at the history of Mike McDonald, and you think that that's going to be a offense that just throws, throws, throws. I mean, sure, you can look at Ryan Grubb's offenses the last couple years at Washington and think that this is going to be a high-powered passing attack, but is it really? Because everything at the head coach says it's probably going to be the opposite. And I just wanted to point this out, mentioning Tyler Lockett as a cut candidate, because I feel like the Dynasty community is kind of assuming a couple things. That Mike McDonald is going to be a defensive coach. He's going to be hands-off on the offense. And Ryan Grubb's just going to chuck it all over the field. I've already heard narratives about DK Metcalf and JSN. And then the narrative that's just pervasive is Tyler Lockett's going to get cut. So you look at Tyler Lockett's contract. If he were to be cut pre-July 1st, you're talking about $20 million dead cap. Sure, you'd save $7 million against the cap this year. But it's a big cap hit. That's essentially like saying we're just eating it for a year. He's so bad, we're eating it for a year just to get him out of here. And then if he's cut post June 1st, it's still $10 million dead cap. Same with trade. Numbers are the same, whether it's a release or whether it's a trade. So there's more cap savings if it's post June 1st. But if you're betting on that narrative continuing, I think there's going to be some ability to get some cheap Tyler Lockett. Now, I'm not saying I really want to go buy more Tyler Lockett. I already have a ton of him. But I've tried to sell him. You're not selling him. Can't sell him for 2/3. I've had him on the auto accept trade block for 2/3 in damn near every league. Not one bite. And now this is a good class. I'm interested in getting some more of those thirds. But at the same time, if you can't sell him for that, I actually think in certain formats, it makes sense. If you need a 7th threshold receiver, I think the narrative of him being cut, and then the narrative that you really don't want to buy players with that type of profile right now, that'll be somebody that I might actually try to buy over the next week before free agency, before we know for sure, is he getting cut or is he not getting cut? Do they sign another receiver? Is there any movement with Seattle? Because that's one of those teams that they filled everything at the very end. They were the last team to hire a coach. They got Ryan Grubb at the last minute as the offensive coordinator. I don't think really anybody has a handle on what their offense is going to look like. So if you're willing to bet one way or the other, I think you can get Lockett without actually having to give up the picks. Can I go through and look at some potential roster clogger receivers that I'm holding right now and find my way to get somebody like Lockett? Can I give up Quentin Johnson and get Lockett in a third? Can I give up guys like Jonathan Mingo? Can I give up some players that might just be sitting there, but I'm not really sure what's going to happen with them? Somebody like Jalen Hyatt. Can I move those in a deal to get Lockett when I'm already kind of banking on one of them to be a threshold receiver? Might even be able to get a plus because Tyler Lockett's old. And I've tried to sell him, and you can't really sell him. So maybe try to go the other way because I think the narrative that he's going to get cut just isn't a guarantee. Remember, this is a guy that's been there his entire career. Sure, it's a new regime, but it's not totally a new regime. You know, nothing's really changed from ownership standpoint. Pete Carroll's still in the building. It's not like it's a complete overhaul and they're rebooting the franchise like Washington. It's different. And this may be one of those where, hey, the cap savings isn't worth cutting a guy that has been a reliable veteran and a guy that we like. And he's our third receiver. It's a strong receiver core if you have Metcalf, Lockett, and JSN. So I just don't know if they're going to be in the business of let's just get rid of Tyler Lockett. And I think that narrative has been one that's been peddled around a lot, and I'm willing to go the other way on it. Number five, this is a tweet from Matt Miller of ESPN at NFL Draft Scout. He says, six first-round receivers. He did an entire breakdown of positional out of 32 players going in the first round, four quarterbacks, six receivers, one tight end, six offensive tackles, three interior O-line. 20 of 32 picks conservatively will be offense in the first round. And he has six wide receivers highlighted. So really the narrative post-combine is there's going to be at least six receivers going in the first round. Three go in the top nine, like you see a ton of mock drafts mentioning, the wide receiver three to the Bears at nine. There's going to be a cascade effect where somebody else jumps up into the top 15, top 18. Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy. Somebody jumps up to where now there's a push and there's a run for more receivers to go off in the first. Then you look at the second. We'll go through the landing spots in a second. I mean, you could see 10 receivers go in the top 50, 10 receivers go in the top 45, top 40 maybe. But here's my pushback. And we're going to do more content talking about tiers and bets to make within the tiers. Talked a little bit about this last night on Destination Dynasty as well. But just look at some of the landing spots. If we make this assumption, six receivers in the first round, right? And let's assume that three do go in the top 10. So the same landing spots you constantly see, the Chargers, Arizona, Titans, Giants, Bears, all those teams could take a receiver. So I think there's going to be three that go before the top nine. But then you get to that weird pocket where you have the Vikings, the Broncos, the Raiders. Like those teams could be the ones that move up to take quarterbacks. Those could be the ones that take a second round quarterback and they go in a different direction with these picks. They could take receivers, probably not Minnesota, but Denver and Las Vegas wouldn't be shocking if they took a receiver. New Orleans wouldn't be shocking if they took a receiver. Indianapolis at 15 wouldn't shock me if they took a receiver. But then you have, I think, the landing spots that people, Seattle 16, we just talked about them with Tyler Lockett. But at 17, it starts to get intriguing with the landing spots. However, as things currently sit, assuming these teams take a wide receiver, is it a spot you're willing to buy in with premium draft capital? I'll give a shout out to Cody Smith, who mentioned this numerous times on the stream on Saturday. You know, should we have really bought JSN as wide receiver one in the class when he landed in Seattle with two bona fide good receivers already there? And I'm not saying JSN can't be good, but the idea being if a guy lands in a landing spot where there's already two good receivers, but yet he's the wide receiver four in the class, how do you treat that? Now, the team's probably taking him, and I'll get to those landing spots in a second, for maybe the departure of another receiver eventually. But do you want to deal with that for a year or two? Do you want to deal with, well, this other guy eventually is going to be gone, and this guy they're drafting now is going to take over? Do you want to deal with that? When we play in a 1 to 2 year window where the market fluctuates daily, weekly, monthly, do you really want to draft the wide receiver three on a team? The wide receiver three on a team that also has a tight end? And we'll go through some of those situations. So here we go, Jacksonville. One thing I didn't mention that I'll talk about here shortly is Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley, the Jags have to give up a second round pick if they keep Calvin Ridley, except if Calvin Ridley signs with them after free agency starts. No one's reporting that. If he re-signs with them, yeah, they have to give up a second. But if free agency hits, March 13th hits, and then they re-sign Calvin Ridley, they give up a third. So this idea that they have to give up a second if they keep him is unfounded. It's basically if they don't let him hit free agency, they have to give up a second. But why can't he just hit free agency and then he signs back with Jacksonville? So there's a good chance they keep Calvin Ridley. That was the report last week, is they still want to keep him. This second round narrative, oh, they don't want to give up a second, so they're not going to keep him. That's an unfounded narrative. Really, it's just they have to let him hit the market for a day, let him take other offers, and there's a chance he could leave. But they can just re-sign him back and give up a third. If anything, they're probably already talking to him. They know those parameters. Calvin Ridley knows those parameters. He knows he's probably going to hit the market, but good chance Jacksonville brings him back. They are at 17, Cincinnati at 18. They're keeping T. Higgins unless they trade him in the next week or so. He's going to be there next year. Do you really want the third receiver on the Bengals? It sounds good, but I don't want to wait. Oh, well, T. Higgins could be gone next year. What if they extend him? What if they tag him? I mean, unlikely they would draft the receiver in the first round and then keep T. Higgins, but you get the point. You're still having to wait at least another year for that receiver to get that role. You think that's a good investment? Then I get it. But it's high capital to pay for that investment. 108, 109, when there's a lot of other receivers. Pick 19, the Rams. Rams could draft a receiver. Wouldn't shock me, but Cooper Kupp's still there. Whether you think he's good or not, he's still there. I doubt a receiver that comes in there, they draft Xavier Worthy. I doubt he comes in there and you're like, I have to have it, when Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua are notorious target earners that would be there. Steelers, same thing. I think people like Jacksonville, Cincy, and the Rams for their offenses, but don't necessarily like the situation. The Steelers have two good receivers. Both Deontay Johnson and George Pickens are very good. But then you add to that, people don't really like the offense. So Steelers draft a receiver. Would anyone really be excited by that? Miami takes a receiver, Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Would anyone be excited by that? I don't think so. How about Philly? Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. I've heard some narratives that this is the A.J. Brown replacement. Okay. Would anyone be excited by that? They also have a tight end that's good. Wouldn't really be shocking. They could take one, but would you really want to use premier draft capital? And again, and I'm assuming this is the wide receiver 4 or 5 off the board. And this is a top 10 dynasty pick. You're using the 109 or 110 on this player that goes to any of those spots. Jacksonville, Cincy, the Rams, Pittsburgh, Miami, and Philly. Pick 23. People have talked about Houston being a good spot. Okay. They already have two top 24 dynasty receivers. So again, it's crowded. He would be the third receiver, whoever that is, going to another spot. I think the first spot would be Dallas at 24. People may buy into that. They draft Brian Thomas Jr. next to CeeDee Lamb. People will be in on that. But then immediately, 25, Green Bay. Green Bay already has a lot of receivers. That's all I hear. They already have a bunch of guys. They have Dobbs. They have Reed. They have Watson. They have Dontavian Wicks. They have two tight ends. Why do I want a receiver to go to Green Bay? I think that would be the narrative with the Packers. Tampa Bay, I can see it. If Mike Evans leaves, I can certainly see that as a premier landing spot that people would love. Direct replacement for Mike Evans. So that would be one of the spots with Dallas that I think people would buy into. Arizona, they're picking 27. They're probably already drafting a receiver early unless they trade back. But I'm already assuming that Arizona gets a receiver early, whether it's Neighbors or whether it's Marvin Harrison or whether it's Rome Odunze. But they're going to get a receiver earlier in the first round, so they're probably not a team likely to double up on one at 27. Then it gets to be a little intriguing. Buffalo at 28, people would love. Detroit, 29, I don't know. It's a good offense, but they're already supporting the number one tight end. They're already supporting another top 40 receiver, yuck, in Jameson Williams. And then they have Amon-Ra St. Brown. Is that a great spot for a receiver? I don't know if the community would fully buy in that that's a great spot. Can Jared Goff, forget about J-Mo, can Jared Goff support three first-round level, rookie pick level assets at wide receiver? And that's not even counting Jameson Williams, who some people still value fairly high. Would Detroit be seen as a good landing spot? I don't think so. Baltimore, no way. People would not like a receiver in Baltimore. They just wouldn't. They never have. It's a different offense now with Todd Monken, but it doesn't matter. Rashad Bateman, Nelson Aguilar, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, Zay Flowers. There's already a lot of guys there. I don't think people would like Baltimore. San Francisco, people wouldn't like San Francisco. Let's be honest. People wouldn't love San Francisco for a first-round receiver. And then you get to Kansas City at 32. So my whole point was the second half of the draft, excluding those teams that could be in the quarterback mix, Denver, Las Vegas, then you have New Orleans and Indy, not drafting QBs, but those teams could be four intriguing teams. But let's assume none of them go receiver. Let's assume the wide receiver four goes off the board in the second half of the first round. So 17 to 32. And of those landing spots, Jacksonville, Cincinnati, the Rams, Pittsburgh, Miami, Philadelphia, Houston, Green Bay, Arizona, Detroit, Baltimore, San Francisco. That is 12 of those 16 picks that I don't think the community would see as favorable, which means I think that correlation between Matt Miller saying at least six receivers are going in the first, but everybody just assumes the landing spots are going to be Tampa Bay to replace Evans, Dallas because they need another guy by CD, and then Buffalo and Kansas City. Now, that would be the dream, right? The three landing spots for the other first-round receivers besides the top three. The remaining three landing spots where a team drafts a receiver in the first round, Dallas, Buffalo, and Kansas City. That would just be a dream for fantasy. But that's having to go three for three. And there's always chaos. There's always teams that move around. There's always going to be one or two teams that takes a receiver where you're going to go, why the hell did they take a receiver? Remember when Dallas took CeeDee Lamb when they already had Michael Gallup? They paid him, and then they already had Amari Cooper under contract. They took CeeDee Lamb. I don't know about that. And it was a bad decision for people to fade CeeDee Lamb because of the landing spot, but the point was I'm looking for immediate profit, and I just don't see the landing spots in the second half of the first round that correlates with the fact that six receivers could go in the first. Now, just one more point on this. We get to the second, then it really opens up. Carolina, New England, Washington, Chargers, Titans, Giants, Washington again. Like, not a lot of sexy landing spots, but definitely landing spots where you could go, oh yeah, the Titans took a receiver in the early second. Chargers took a receiver in the early second. Washington took a receiver in the early second. New England and Carolina desperately could use receivers. The Giants, I mean, those teams all could be ones where you see two or three more receivers go in that pocket inside the top 40, and the landing spots actually might be a little bit better. Like, I don't hate a receiver that goes to the Panthers. I think whoever it is, if it's one that people like, that will be a candidate to be the wide receiver four in the class. You know, that's where T. Higgins went, was tied to a number one overall pick, just like T. Higgins was. I could see that narrative to where, oh, that's Bryce Young's number one receiver. Boom, give me him. Bryce Young will feed him. Same with the Patriots. If they end up taking Drake May, boom, that's Drake May's number one receiver. They go Drake May at three, and then they take a receiver at 34. Boom, that's Drake May's guy. Same with the Chargers. Man, they're going to cut Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, whoever they took there. Boom, that's Justin Herbert's guy. Like, I can see those narratives being very pervasive to where you just have a lot of options. So I think this value of these late first, early seconds, they're much closer together for these reasons, only because my prediction is there may be 10 receivers that go in the top 45 picks. But I think the second rounders are going to push some of those first rounders, obviously depending on the players. But I just don't think the landing spots are there in the first round, whereas they open up in the second round. So I just wanted to put that out there and talk through the reactions from the combine, because I think a lot of receivers won from the combine. We talked about that on Destination Chill. Like, there's just a lot more receivers that I feel confident going in that top 50 range, but the landing spots are a little shaky when we hear, ooh, six first round receivers. There's going to be one or two that's very disappointing in that group if that happens. And last up, I saved the best for last, at least for me, and a lot of you probably will say this one's underwhelming, but it is from the account TWSN__. Is it a really good show talking all things NFL? Not one that I think a lot of people know about, but a really good account. They put out weekly content. Malik Wright at the Wright Report, with two T's is a great follow if you don't follow him. But they talk about Mac Jones. They talk about Mac Jones' future. Saw some other reports over the weekend that teams think that Mac Jones could fetch somewhere around like a fifth round pick, but it sounds like Mac Jones is for sure going to get traded. And that's a guy that I think has just been forgotten. And I just want to remind everybody what happens with quarterbacks that were first round picks. And we're going to go back all the way to 2016, let's say it. Carson Wentz got another shot. Mitchell Trubisky got another shot. Josh Rosen, remember, even got another chance. Was traded after he went to Arizona, got another chance. Baker Mayfield got another chance. Sam Darnold got another chance. Other guys that were first-round picks that have gotten second chances. You've had Justin Fields maybe getting another chance here soon. And then you have Mac Jones. So I literally just named all the first-rounders that are still not currently with the team that drafted them. Every one of them has gotten another chance. Now, it ended badly with Mac Jones in New England. Getting benched, getting pulled in, getting pulled out. Some of the reports that have come about with his attitude and teams couldn't stand him and the whole Bailey Zappi was in a different film room as Mac Jones. Like, none of that is good. But just reminded me of, you know, the fact that Brian Hoyer was with the Patriots. You heard what Johnny Manziel said about Brian Hoyer. Just said the guy was awful. Like, that was the room Mac Jones was in. That was the QB that was his backup. He was with Josh McDaniels. He had Matt Patricia as an offensive coordinator. I mean, things have unraveled, not just Mac Jones, but literally the entire Patriots organization the last couple of years has unraveled. So to sit there and think Mac Jones was given a fair shot at all, where he was actually able to thrive, I think is completely misguided. Now, I'm not saying he has no responsibility or that he's a guy that's just going to bounce back and be a franchise QB, but he's going to get another chance. That is the main theme with this, is he's going to get another chance. And if you look right now on Keep Trade Cut, he's wide receiver 39. I mean, he's right there with Hendon Hooker, Trey Lance, Desmond Ridder. He's below Gardner Minshew. He's below Aiden O'Connell. He's below Sam Howell. He's below Kenny Pickett. Like, this is a guy that you actually can probably stash a little bit. Like, if you're willing to trade one of these QBs that is a quote-unquote starter, Russell Wilson, Derek Carr, Geno Smith, Daniel Jones, I want to collect some Mac Jones. I think he's going to get traded. Now, as that video said, it's a four-minute video from March 1st where they talk about the rumors at the Combine about Mac Jones getting traded. I agree with the person that was talking. It's actually another account at Alameda Views, Daniel Alameda, the co-owner of TWSN, talking about Mac Jones, and it's very important that he goes to a landing spot where they're going to give him a chance. They're going to give him a fair shake. Doesn't mean they hand him the job, but they're going to give him a shot. And it's sink or swim. Like, this is his chance. I agree totally with what this person said. This is his chance. 100%, this is his shot. Like, he doesn't get a third chance after this. He's seen as a clear backup after this. He's Sam Darnold. He's Carson Wentz. But he's going to get another chance. It's just, where's the landing spot going to be? What's the atmosphere around him? What are the weapons? But I want some Mac Jones. I still believe in Mac Jones. The efficiency from his rookie year is not something that goes unfounded. Meaning he was a top 12 quarterback from an efficiency standpoint as a rookie with what he had in New England. Like, that deserves another chance. That will get another chance. Now, is he that cute quarterback anymore? We don't know. He could have been broken over the last year or two, but I'm willing to bet on Mac Jones, and it's going to be very cheap to get him based on where he's going right now. And then you have other rookies coming in, Bo Nance, Bo Nix, Michael Penix. Like, those guys are going to be seen ahead of Mac Jones. Like, he's going to be outside the top 40. So I'm willing to take a shot on him compared to a lot of the other names that he's around. So make that bet now before he gets traded. If he gets traded somewhere and people are like, I like that spot for Mac Jones, he gets traded to Minnesota. It's over. His value will go up. He'll be his top 30 quarterback because it's like he's going to be potentially the starter for this next year. So if, once he goes to that spot, any value you thought you might get, you're going to end up paying Derek Carr, Geno Smith price for Mac Jones. I don't want to pay that price. Like, I don't want to pay starter price. That's the whole point of this. I want to try to pay backup prices. So if that means you have to trade a clogger receiver to get Mac Jones, that's another option. Jonathan Mingo for Mac Jones. Marvin Mims for Mac Jones. Like, there's a ton of options, but I want to get more Mac Jones in my portfolio. I have right now sitting on about 14%. I'd like to get that up to about 20-25%. Just because I think he's good, but also if he goes to one of those spots, I think there's a chance of a value gain as well. So I'd rather make that bet before NFL free agency. And that is six rumors that have come about on Twitter from the NFL Combine that I'm trying to bet on in the next week. So go take some action. Again, as I said in the beginning of the show, the importance of identifying either these six or many, many others that you can concoct is to act on them now. Make your bet now, even if you're wrong. Make your bet now. Do not wait for the trade. Do not wait for the signing. Do not wait for the movement or the other transaction that causes everybody to have a foregone conclusion or has everybody in the same lane or in lockstep on the opinion of a player. Get in before that. That's the best odds. That's the best odds to hit a higher range of outcomes. You know, that is the way to make a profit on these transactions instead of just waiting for everyone to be in lockstep. Oh, then I'm going to go try to trade for Mac Jones. Then I'm going to go to try to sell Tyler Lockett or sell Mike Evans or whatever it might be. As soon as everybody sees that it is what it is, there's no edge. You can make the move, but then it's just a player tank. Oh, I don't like Mike Evans' new landing spot, so I'm just going to sell. Ooh, I like Mac Jones's new landing spot, so I'm going to pay QB 30 prices now because he's there versus paying QB 42 prices because no one knows what's going to happen. So make those bets early. It's a way to get ahead of the masses when everybody is just saying, let me just wait to see what happens in free agency and the draft. Then I'll decide. But then you realize, man, I'm in a league with sharp people and everybody waited. So now everybody's in lockstep and there's nothing that actually takes place from a trade perspective unless somebody's just willing to bet on one side or the other. And that's not how I play. So if you like the work, check out more at destinationdevy.com. Subscribe to the YouTube feed. Also on Dynasty Trades in 5, subscribe over there. Myself, Shane, and Clay, we do a show at least once a week, Tuesday nights, 8:30 Eastern. Then we also do these hammer streams a couple times a week where we answer more trade questions. Manic and Chill with Shane is a weekly venture that I do with him. And then check out my boy Shane's solo show, Shane Says, debuting on Destination Devy feed last week. So go to YouTube, support Shane. It's his first shot at a solo show. It was really entertaining. And if you like actionable trade advice, actionable dynasty management, check out that show. He literally walks through like how he is running his dynasty portfolio. And then, of course, my show, Dynasty Portfolio Weekly, kind of does the same thing on a weekly basis. But support all the creators at DD, destinationdevy.com, patreon.com/allgas. We are 1 week away from the legal tampering period kicking off. Things are going to become a frenzy over the next month or so. Can't wait to be here for it. If you want more access to me, join the Heisman tier over in the Destination Devy Discord. I'm literally there 30, 40 hours a week just talking about this stuff in the voice chat. So if you want more of that, check that out. And with that, I will go ahead and sign off for the week. Be chill.